Hello everyone, and this is Slava, your co-host, and like, before even saying who is with me today, you folks already know what happened, right? Because like, I left these two folks alone for just one episode. Like, coming back, it's already new name, new logo, like, like, you can't leave them like even for a second, like literally for a second. Okay. Tell me, my friend, please do introduce yourself to remind listeners who you are, and tell me why you guys done it.
Hello, everyone. Sandeep here. Slava, yes, we missed you for last episode. Me and Zane had a really fun, interesting conversation. But yeah, most interestingly, we had a very strong feedback from some of our listeners that we were kind of having a collision of the name with other podcasts, and it was hard for them to find. So we decided, let's take Bias for Action. Let's do it now than wait for longer. So all credits to Zane. He came up with a very interesting name, and we also discussed actually why that name. The only sad part, or I would say good part, is that you are not there in the discussion. So I understand that's exactly the pain point that you're sharing with our listeners today. But yeah, what do you think about our new name, new logo?
Now, first of all, keep in mind that by the time of this recording, I still have not seen a production version, so it have not hit. So you listeners from the future, you know the final result. I partly know the final result. And I kind of liked it. And it feel, you know, the first it felt like you folks just want to hide from me completely, because we also changed the Slack channel name. And this effectively resulted in changing DNS name for the Slack room. So when I try to log in from my home laptop, it's like literally saying, no, like there is no such chat room. Like, why are you even trying? Like, who are you? Oh my God, what's going on? Like, I was checking, double checking everything. And then realized that it's actually changed the DNS name. And the funny part, if you're trying to log in from the web UI, web UI is smart enough to do a redirection. So it's check DNS, and if it sees the renaming, it will redirect you to a new one. However, if you do trying to sign in from the macOS client, and inside of the client it asks you what's the name of the room, you're providing the name, it's not going to tell you, oh, the name, the room is the name, have changed, here is a new one. No, it's just silently tells you, no, there is no such room, and that's it. Which effectively means that first normal reaction of normal person would be to check spelling, to check typos, and other stuff like this. So yeah, it took me some time to realize that the room.
I'm so sorry, my friend. That was so unintentional.
Of course.
So listeners, listen. This is one of the use cases where your production systems can go wrong. Never assume that you are the only customer of your product.
True. By the way, we indirectly mentioned that we do have Slack, so should we just invite everyone?
I think it's a very good idea. It gives us a very close form interaction with our listeners. I really like that idea.
Yeah, also like, so we probably will move generic discussion to some of our private chat inside of that room, but everyone else can just join generic discussion. And for that, just ping one of us in Twitter, Zane, Sandeep, or me, and we will be more than happy to add you. And yeah, you will have the honor be able directly to ping one of us, which is like a lot.
Exactly. That's what made me excited when you mentioned about this, because it gives us a channel where we could easily communicate with our listeners on one-on-one basis, and other listeners can communicate with other fellow listeners of this podcast and suggest new topics, criticize us for talking something which they did not intend to, or they could tell us how we could improve, or they could congratulate us when we had a really good podcast which probably helped them to know something or had an interesting time. So it's an awesome platform to have like immediate communication. Just open the Slack and then tell us what happened or what you want to listen more. And like Slava said, do let us know on Twitter, and we would be very, very eager and happy to add you all on that Slack chat room. Thanks, Slava, for that idea. I think it is a very nice idea. We should definitely do that.
yes, I just wanted to mention our Slack will be a safe place. You are safe to call each other in any way you want without being afraid to being kicked out. Yes.
Freedom of speech.
Yes.
Of course, podcast is all about speech.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so we have tons of the topics. I don't even know what you folks have discussed. As I said, so someone have not yet released the episode, so I have not heard it. But Sandeep told me that none of the topics that I want to cover today actually been discussed in the previous episode. This makes me wonder what else was covered. Maybe I actually missed a lot of the stuff from the industry. So let's start. The first things first, like PlayStation 5. At this point, it's just impossible to not to hear all the leaks because they've been going from all the sites, and Sony itself confirmed many of the interesting features about the new console. But yeah, I know you, Sandeep, are not too much into the gaming industry. I do, by the way, have PlayStation 4, not the Pro, but the one that used to be released before the Pro. And this is huge. Like, this is huge because last major game console update have happened in 2013, I think. So PlayStation 4 got out in 2013, if I'm not mistaken. So we're speaking about 8 years. And yes, this used to be actually, it's hard to imagine right now, but 8 years was to be a normal cadence of the release time before major updates of the consoles, which was like crazy even back then. So I do remember when PlayStation 4 went out, I actually was skeptical that it will take eight years before the next major releases. And here we are, we have PlayStation 5 only now. And it's not even now, it's actually going out by the time of around Christmas on 2020. So the only thing that we're going to hear soon, apart from leaks, is probably official announcement in February. Maybe by the time this episode already edited and out, you folks even get a chance to hear this official release. But there are pretty interesting leaks that's either confirmed, like almost confirmed already. And before jumping to that, Sandeep, have you heard anything? So I know you're not in the game industry, but maybe somehow, somewhere.
No, you are right. I'm not into gaming a lot. But one thing that made me really curious to hear more from you was that after 2013, this is the first major update. I couldn't think of any product which did not had a major release for like 5+ years and then still be one of the market leaders. So which means how interesting was the 2013 release and how interesting is this release which you are going to talk about. So I don't know anything about that. I only know that PlayStation 5 is coming just because I was following some CES news that we talked in a couple of episodes before. But I do not technically understand the features and then why it is so exciting. But being an engineer, I know after 8 years, if a major thing is coming and it is being cooked up for 8 years, it should be like really amazing and much awaited. I'm all ears to hear more from you.
And to be fair, we need to mention that in between PlayStation 5 and 4, there obviously was PlayStation 4 Pro, which effectively used to be the same platform, but with better hardware. Now, starting PlayStation 4, one thing that they have done, they effectively moved to a more normal PC-like architecture. So you literally can think about PlayStation 4 as powerful PC wrapped in the particular shape or form, if you want. Inside, they historically was using Radeon GPUs. Back then, it was not even AMD. I think it was a standalone company. Now, these days, what we know about PlayStation 5? The biggest thing that's happening, they have promised a full compatibility with all old games. So this is actually huge news because, first of all, you no longer don't have to throw away all your library of games from PS4, PS4 Pro that you probably have accumulated for years and years and years, literally 8 years. Second part, it's even actually more. If the leaks are right, you should be able to use even games that used to be released before PlayStation 4, like PlayStation 3 and before. I think because the difference in time is so big, they actually probably have so powerful hardware right now that they can just literally emulate that old hardware platform, and that's about it. Now, yeah, and actually, yeah, if we
It's a big thing for a manufacturer like Sony to have compatibility with games which might be like 5 to 6 years older, right? I mean, it's something like huge news. But like you said, the hardware might be so powerful that you could just emulate it and then make it work. But please go ahead. Yeah, that's very interesting. That's awesome news, I guess, for many people.
Yep, that's indeed. And to be fair, I have only games from PlayStation 4, so I'm not that looking forward to PS3, 2, 1, and so on, just because I don't have games from it. But this is indeed very interesting news, probably, if you have some games from the old time. Everything else, to be fair, everything else is relatively a big update in the hardware, but I would not see any, like, thing that's got, that are revolution. It's, yeah, better CPU, better GPU, everything is better, but a better, bigger storage. I think they now come with 2 terabytes of SSD, as opposite to 1 terabyte of hard drives that I had on my PS4, normal PS4. So everything else pretty much just an upgrade. And there is one video that presumably got rendered on PS5 real time that shows how amazing it can be. It shows, what do you call it, hair, like it's a female 3D model, specifically focused on the hair, and you can see how detailed it is. Like I remember one of my favorite games that I played several times on PS4 is Detroit Becoming Human. And in that game, they have actually specifically focused on the hair of several main characters, specifically female with a very complex hair styles. And even there, it looks already impressive comparing to everything else that I've seen in the game industry, but it's still far, far from what you can see in that YouTube video. So we definitely will attach the video. I actually copy-pasted it in our document with the topics. So it's like pretty realistic. It just blows my mind. So we're looking forward. I actually, that type of gamers that like two things. Really nice narrative. So I prefer to look and play in the games that are more some nice narrative-based games, that I look on them more on the novel side. But I do like the visual aspect. So if the game is really trashy from the visual aspect, I'm definitely not going to touch it. The same if it has horrible narrative. And obviously, as all of us, there are exceptions. Like I'm currently playing in Bioshock, which is just a linear 3D shooter, which is very, very simple. But it has very, very nice atmosphere. Atmosphere that is just unbelievable, especially counting when exactly Bioshock got developed. So to be fair, that is about it, and the reason by these many leaks is before Sony is any hardware developer, they would be sharing the initial hardware setup, initial hardware device with different vendors. So they effectively send already hardware for the companies so the company can play with it. Obviously, it's far from the normal hardware. If you look in the pictures, you will see that effectively a box, definitely far from the shape that it will have during the final production stage. It's called Dev Kit. And game developers already start working hard. Specifically out of the thing that everyone expects, looks like we will see The Last of Us Part 2. And this is one of the most famous game on the PS4. Part 2 is coming. Hopefully it will be as good as Part 1, but we will see. What else? That's probably all. Like, TLDR. TLDR.
Very, very interesting. I had two things. Mm-hmm. One, is the GPU still AMD Radeon-based? Even in the PlayStation 5, or is there anything, any information related to that?
Actually, I have not seen. I don't remember if it's mentioned anyone, but I very sure yes, it will be Radeon. I don't think they will move anywhere away from AMD.
The reason I asked is like, though I'm not a gamer, since I'm more interested in deep learning and AI and various news around that, just today morning, I was seeing a tweet by a scientist in NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. There is a system called as DLSS, which is based on deep learning. I don't actually fully remember the full form of what DLSS is, but I just know that it's a deep learning based technique. Mm-hmm. Where NVIDIA uses it to increase the frame rate per second. And there is a video that he tweeted. It's only possible with NVIDIA GeForce GPU. And it was very visible, actually, the clarity. Number of frame per second, if I remember correctly, for one of the scene in a game was like 40 without this technique. But after applying this technique in NVIDIA GPUs, it was like around 67 or 70 frames per second. So basically like around 25-30% increase in the frame per second, which means the more clarity for the gamers and then faster processing, faster, game with more activities probably would be more enjoyable with this technique. So I'm pretty sure a lot of AI, deep learning and such techniques are being applied by these hardware industries, and which might be immediately translated into a product feature of these gaming consoles and then a enjoyment for the gamer. So it's all related, and I just know a little bit about the game because of this link between deep learning AI, GPUs and then games, and how it actually improves the experience of gamers.
So you actually point out a really nice technology. So there are two particular way where this will be and used the most already. One is specifically to improve games that doesn't have hardware that allow them to run a high QPS rate. Now, keep in mind that effectively there is no magical bullet. You effectively have a neural network that's trying to guess intermediary pictures in between. So this means that the best way to see it, have you ever had a QLED televisor?
No.
Okay, so QLED is a new technology for showing in televisors. It's kind of middle ground between Ultra HD and OLED, OLED. It's slightly cheaper than OLED, but it's slightly better than Ultra HD. And one of the things with that TVs, they actually requires a high QPS. They requires a high bit, not the bit rate, picture rate. How do you call it?
FPS.
Yes, high FPS to have a smooth transition on the action scenes. So if you use action scenes from the normal movie, usually it's not enough for QLED to provide you with exactly same nice fluent movement of the person due to specifically hardware technology of showing pixels. And they applying left and right technology of trying to guess additional frames. To be fair, just to showcase the current state of the production industry, this feature are the first feature that everyone turns off. Because it looks so horrible that everyone turns... So there is a potential there for sure, and hopefully new models will help us there. And the second biggest part is actually in gaming. And in gaming, mostly... it used to be that you can apply different technique on the cheaper hardware for sure, but nowadays everyone goes to a streaming. And what happens with the streaming, you effectively, yes, even if you have a powerful GPU on the server side that can render a lot of FPS, time to time you cannot send all this FPS, like because of the network problems, latency. So in case of the sudden productivity of the network drop, you can start sending less FPS and start applying technique on the client side to actually guess what are the missing picture frames. Now, this is actually possible. Powerful because in all these current platforms that I of streaming that I was able ever to try, they actually already trying to do similar things. They streaming slightly reduce amount of FPS. This indirectly means that the game experience when you have a powerful hardware that actually can render all the FPS slightly better, and you can see it, you can notice it. I mean, and there is no silver bullet there. Again, any model will be getting guessing. So the information is not there. It's similar to archiving in and unarchiving the video. So effectively here we're speaking about unarchiving video from the zipped file of the video where some of the information is lost and we need to recover it. And obviously it's possible to some extent. So yeah, this is the main things where the future is for these type of models, and specifically because streaming industry on the rise and everyone trying to get there, I'm pretty sure these models will be popular here. But these models are popular on the client side, so it's not something that has a high level of penetration on the server side or on the side where you're actually rendering the game, because there obviously you're striving for AAA experience, which means you need to render all these images. Yeah, this is just a quick comment about where specifically this part will be used. I don't know what else we can actually tell, we can actually speak about here. Obviously, next Switch is coming along. Obviously, also this PlayStation will be probably also have 8 years of lifetime. Similar things, and we'll see. Oh, by the way, if you never play the PlayStation and you're thinking, I also want a game laptop, and why not to buy a gamer PC? Why not to buy a powerful PC? I can tell you the following one. So there is several reasons. Reason number one, yes, gamer PC probably will give you even better quality for sure. Like there is no doubt there. However, you can think about PlayStation like Apple. You're buying PlayStation and everything that's supposed to work there will work. You don't care, it just works. You have the same experience with all games, same controllers, everything familiar, and it's guaranteed to be tested and workable. Now with desktop PC actually starting this interesting consequence, like, oh, you have a better performance on AMD, or you have better performance on Nvidia, or you have a really strange bugs on these specific video cards, you need a specific version of DirectX, therefore you will have to have Windows, God forbid, and a lot of other things. And on top of this, obviously, because of all these fights between console, you have platformers, you have special games specifically designed only for this platform. Like, for example, Last of Us, you cannot play it on the PC. Horizon Dawn, you cannot play it on the PC, and it has nothing to do with the power of PC, you just cannot. It was never ported there, and it might never will be ported there. So you just don't have access to the same games. This, by the way, used to be a powerful weapon in these fights between console. Looks like Xbox is losing left and right. They almost have now zero amount of really interesting games that specifically developed for Xbox. And looks like the last nail in this coffin put Microsoft itself by saying that we're going all in being cross-platform. So you now kind of buying game for Windows Live, or I don't remember how the service is called, and then you can play it everywhere. Similar thing that Apple done with Apple Arcadia. But in this case, if they actually will proceed this philosophy that you compiling for this abstract platform and then it can distribute it everywhere, this actually killing the whole idea of the Xbox. Yes, it's worth everything for Xbox will be working, it's better tested, yada yada, but there will be less and less games that only available on the Xbox, so I don't know who will actually going to buy it. But we'll see. Both of the new consoles, Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5, are scheduled to go out next year. Even the fact that you hear so much noise about PlayStation 5 and not even close to the same amount of noise about Xbox Series X should tell you a lot about which platform to choose. Okay, a lot.
Great.
Yes.
I think it's a very interesting thing that makes me think that I think we should host, probably I should make a research and host a episode on gamers, talking about gaming industry, game and streaming industry. I also heard, and I think I briefly chatted with you, Facebook is really becoming big in the game streaming industry, and it's eating up revenue from Twilio. So as a teaser for our listeners, and also to educate myself, who is not a gamer but very interested in applying technologies in this field. So probably we should host an episode. Yeah, that aside, let's continue further.
I would suggest to actually buy console and play. Because, like, if you're not inside, there's so many things looks reasonable why they're not. And you would be surprised how many companies, the whole big companies, took this approach that looks reasonable, but none of the gamers would actually put it on the roadmap. So, yeah, it would be nice. Yes.
That's a long cycle, my friend. If I have to play, understand, feel, and become a gamer, and then understand the industry, probably I would be hosting that episode in next year. Because once I start gaming, I know from a lot of my friend gamers, including you, that it's so addictive and so interesting. And if there is some games like you that makes you really think and do, and then, like you said, the narrative-based games, it's going to hook you up.
Yep.
Probably I might not show up regularly for our podcast after that, so I would be taking it easy. But yeah, it is a very interesting and something that needs attention from my side. I need to know more. I cannot be this illiterate in the gaming industry. I need to know more. I will do my homework.
Okay. So moving on to the next topic, I want briefly to mention that DigitalOcean lays out people, laying out like some amount of people, pretty big actually. They're not big by itself, so the amount of people, maybe like 30 or something like that. So it might look small, but the digital ocean is small. And the reason why it's interesting, because it kind of shows the interesting thing about the cloud business as a whole. In order to be successful in the cloud, you need to be enterprise ready. You need to focus on enterprise mostly, and it's not enough to have a good product. Like, good product by itself is not enough, and I think IT industry overall completely missing this point. Having a good product is a very, very small part of the success. Hopefully DigitalOcean will be able to change, to move around, to refocus and do whatever it takes to become successful. But nevertheless, I was looking at them and always questioning like how they're going to become successful. Just looking at their portfolio, it was so strange. They clearly don't have tons of the enterprise features the enterprise might need. They clearly don't have a salespeople down to earth that can sell their product to enterprise. And they're still in the cloud business. So I always was wondering from where they're getting money, because cloud business is not cheap. Like, you need to invest a lot, and with potentially might not getting anything in the middle future. So it's like really a long-term investment that might not even plays out, especially today when the market actually kind of divided, and looks like they don't have tons of money. And my questions slowly start unwrapping. Yes, they're laying out people, but we'll see. I'm really, really intrigued by their future to see if they will survive at all. I used to use them actively, I no longer. So I do remember a time when the DigitalOcean has this cheapest droplets. Droplets is like virtual instances, Google Compute Engine, or EC2 if you or Azure VMs, whatever. And they used to have the cheapest prices. And for me, as a small user with a small wallet, sure, that was the place to go. I actually had there several pet projects. I used them actively. At some point, I start using them only for backup. They finally introduced blob storage, similar to S3, I think. They introduced something else, so I start using them for backup only. And now I have realized that I stopped using them completely. Like, I'm not using them at all. Zero, nothing, have there anything. And back then I was asking myself, okay, if they're the cheapest one, how are they getting money? Because they usually you dropping the price for average, not for the big people who are buying in bulk, but if you're dropping in price for people like me for even 1 hour purchase, this means that you're targeting me. Me, someone with a small wallet, not the enterprise, and I'm your focus audience, which leads to the question from where are you going to get money? Because my, I don't know, $100 that I paid them for the duration of half a year, I don't think that this is something that makes a difference. So yeah, this is a very interesting use case, very interesting business case. I'm really eager to see them in half a year, what's going to happen to them. For now, it looks really strange, really, really strange. And what do you think about DigitalOcean? Do you have your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, topic in general seemed very interesting to me when you were talking about and explaining things like what, according to you, DigitalOcean did right, what looks strange, and who is the target user, enterprise versus like small. These were all like very interesting topic, and there were three or four burning questions that was running in my mind during this whole description. Mm-hmm. First one is, when you actually said enterprise readiness, what did you mean by that? For example, cloud as a whole is so big, right? Amazon, even today, after 35 billion plus revenue, they say that we are just getting started in cloud, probably around 5% of the potential people who might be on the cloud is on the cloud today, which means 95% of the market is still open. And that's exactly what Azure, Google Cloud, everyone pitch, which means the market opportunity is so huge. And in any other domain, apart from cloud, I could say that if the market opportunity is capitalized only to say at the extent of 5%, which means there would be hundreds of companies who would be trying to achieve the remaining 95% of the pie. Mm-hmm. But maybe one of the reasons, like you said, it's a very high initial investment business. It might be very hard for companies to eat up that loss or the cost of building up things that would eventually pay profit over a period of time. So that might answer why it's only Amazon, Azure from Microsoft and Google Cloud are the prominent ones. But that will still not answer, like, why is IBM, who is also a deep pocket, who could also invest for long game, is not as big as these top three. So coming back to the question, what did you mean by saying DigitalOcean may not be enterprise ready, or they might be missing on being enterprise ready?
By the way, IBM has a tons of profit from private cloud. They have a private cloud, and the fact that they're not focusing on public cloud doesn't mean that they don't have profit, and they're actually very good in business strategic development of the private clouds. Yeah, they're not doing a big splash out of it, which is normal. If you're facing enterprise, this is absolutely normal strategy. You can easily be a huge, big, and you might already have chunk of the market that actually matters. While DigitalOcean will be focusing on that small tail. But overall, when I'm saying not enterprise ready, it's a completely different set of features that requires by enterprise versus requires by end customer. So let me take an example of a feature on the GCP. You have an enterprise ready set of notebooks, and you have a Colab that developed by Google. Colab is a perfect example of the service that focusing on average user, while first Cloud AI Platform notebooks are the solution for the hosted Jupyter notebooks. Now, the enterprise ready solution answering tons of other questions. For example, how are you going to prevent data exfiltration? How are you going to set up access? How are you going to integrate it with your current networking system? How you make sure that your notebook can access from the network perspective source of your data? There are so many questions that you need to answer if you're going to do the simplest way of customer migration, and the simplest way is lift and shift. If you're planning to grasp the market by lift and shift, you need to investigate architecture that customer have and provide an easy, seamless way to do a lift and shifting. Obviously, there always will be customers who will do a redesign of the architecture from scratch, sure, but that is ideal case and almost never happens. And here is two examples. One is purely focusing on students who doesn't want to spend money, and they don't care about such things. They don't care about support of VPC SC, for example, that we recently have released about notebook, and I forgot to mention. We will have some time. Similar here. When I look on DigitalOcean, when it got released, like you... Just think about it. They did not have any analog of subnetworks or VPCs by the time of the release. I'm not even speaking about any horizontal integration of permissions model, anything like that. So it was very interesting things for geeks who for some reason have a VM level project that they can move there with a very, very cheap instances. Yeah, they used to be cheap. They probably no longer that cheap as they used to be. So that, in my opinion, key questions. They cannot answer any of the questions that will be asked if you're doing lift and shift, even of the simple setup. Like, I want to do a lift and shift of my pet projects. I need to be able easily to reproduce a similar setup there, which is not possible. I guess if I were to summarize this, enterprise focusing on the customers for enterprise solutions are architects within the companies. Customer for non-enterprise solution, actually people who are going to click buttons. So they've actually focused on the people who are going to click buttons, and that is the tail. Tail usually with very, very small amount of market money-wise.
That's a very interesting thing. Thanks for answering that. Lot of things to learn, as usual. The next point that was running in my mind was, It is so easy while we are building a product to assume, for example, in this case, where if I make it easily accessible, cheap, and such features which will be compelling for someone like a person who's just getting started in the industry or running a small pet project like me and you, or even the students, it might be so easy for these companies to think, if we get these customers now, they would be part of enterprise later, and then because they are already familiar with our tools and technologies, they would influence the companies wherever they are going to, the enterprise in quotes that you are mentioning, to use this particular platform. So which means it might be one of the marketing and product marketing strategy of DigitalOcean, where they thought, okay, we are going to get all the people onto DigitalOcean who might be a big enterprise users in future, and we might succeed on that, and we will eat the loss during this journey. But it is so strange, and also it is not so strange, that this assumption is not right always. And like you always mention, and which I believe strongly, the key decision maker in enterprises are not just the developers. I think we also talked about this in our second or third episode. So it might be like so intuitive to think this strategy works for the company and then put it on the paper. Like, we have 100,000 students who are using DigitalOcean. Even if 50% turn out to be in big companies, we are going to have those all companies to use us. So which means our projected revenue in 2 years from now will be so big than the loss we are making now. It is so intuitive to put that on paper, but it may not turn out to be true. For example, if it is the case in DigitalOcean, right?
Yeah, and to be fair, I don't even think that this is intuitive. I think it's more like, I developer, I want to implement this nice feature. Let me find the reasoning that I can use to convince myself that this is right. Because it will not take long if you actually will try to dive in the history to see that this particular strategy doesn't work, mostly because any company that will start using you and actually will become any company, any reasonable big company, they will migrate out of you because they will start asking the same question that all other companies were asking you that you were not able to answer. Now, and there is tons of examples, and maybe DigitalOcean will be one of them. Like, there is many, many examples of the company that tried and failed, and this is actually because it's... Again, we're coming back to our first topic. This is a moonshot strategy. Let me do something feature-wise that's so much better than everything else that people will come to me. And this very occasionally works, but you need to have a very good understanding. That works because of the random. Yes, you need to put a lot of work, but also there will be random. And if you literally can risk everything for the random, sure, then off you go. Okay, I think we spend enough time on this topic. What do you think about, in very quick manner, covering Tesla? Tesla is a very short topic. It's just so fun that I wasn't able not to speak about, not to put it on the list.
I'm super excited about Tesla. To be very frank, we spent at least 10 to 15 minutes in our last episode as well. Because one of the topic in our discussion last episode, me and Zain, was differentiating factors. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how Tesla differentiated itself. So I am super excited. If you just get me started to talk about Tesla, probably I will take the whole episode and just keep talking how good they are in various things, not just engineering and future looking. It's also about the marketing. It's also about the servicing, usability with respect to how you get your car serviced, and then interesting things like over-the-air updates. So there are so many things that I could talk. But in one line, if you ask me, tell me something about Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
In general, Tesla is awesome to think about how can I do something on the hardware with just software. And they are trying to bridge a gap on everything that we do in a general software engineering principles, like pipelines to update the software remotely, to be able to do alpha beta tests, and everything of the software best principles is being applied on a real hardware, which is the car. So I would say that a software genius applying all the learnings in his 20 years experience into a hardware setup, which is working really awesome and solving a lot of the problems. And second thing, in this week especially, to all Tesla haters, it has gone 3 times in the stock price. And I was also reading that the Tesla stock short sellers have lost more than $1.5 billion in just 1 week. Just because they thought it would drop, but it did not. It is, I think, around 600 plus today. Yeah, these two things, if you ask me about Tesla.
That is interesting, and I'm going to be short, really short, because I wanted to share one thing that makes me actually laugh. So in Europe, Tesla has a quality problem. So huge, horrible quality problem. They have a rating of the car by the amount of complaints from the end users, and the Tesla always used to be like in top 10. And they lost, like, I think 50 points, and losing 50 points mean that they like around number 70 or something like there. So almost in the last 100. So this is a huge, huge drop from 10 there. At the same time, when they look on the another report from the same research, by the level of the loyalty of the customers to the brand, they're still in the top 10. And like in my mind, I just imagine this interview. So they asking like average Tesla user, is this a shitty car? And he would, yeah, a complete shit, like it's a horrible car. Will you buy it again? Oh yeah, of course, sure.
Doesn't make sense, but it is what it is.
Exactly, yes. So,
I think there is an emotion that it will be better soon.
Yeah, so yeah, it's effectively trust in the brand, in the vision, in the Elon, and all this stuff. Sure. Tesla fixing all these problems, so it's not the problem that stick to you. They do fixing it with a guarantee, so they trying. But this result of the survey, just this realization that answering the question, the car horrible, yes, but if I buy it, yes as well, which is strange, but I guess any product that based on the future, this is more a brand, more idea that the people paying for, not the actual product right now. Everyone has good understanding that this is more a beta for the whole industry than the final production. Okay, this is all I actually wanted to say. So this was so fun in my mind that I decided to share it.
Just one thing which is very related before mm-hmm. we move on. It is also with respect to Apple users, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you ask any Apple user, they say, do you think your phone is overpriced? They say, absolutely. I think it's 2x the price we need to pay for the same product if it was not Apple. But if you ask, iPhone new version is releasing next week, are you going to buy that? Of course. I am an Apple user. I want to buy it. So it is very similar with respect to Apple user and price-based questions to Tesla user.
Oh man, you opened the wrong door, because I do have an Apple, and I think it's a wrong question, because if you ask me, am I satisfied with my phone? I will tell you yes, 100%. Because
I was careful in not asking that question and just asking about the price. There is a reason for not opening that part. I know the answer. Yes, of course. It's a great product.
Yeah, in this case, the satisfaction, the people saying no, they're not satisfied. Because they also will tell you it's overpriced. I'm pretty sure in this question, they also will tell you. Okay, let's actually move on.
What's the next topic? I'm excited.
Oh, pick you. I will give you permission to pick. If you do have a doc open, if you're not, let me send you a link quickly. We have four topics left, and let it be a surprise even for me. So if you look on this list of the topic, it has number 5, 6, 7, and 8. And I'm deliberately not saying what is the topic so you can read, because otherwise we're going to spoil. And I'm pretty sure some of them may go to the next time. So I don't know if you're looking in the doc or not. Probably you don't, or maybe you're looking in the chat somewhere. So let me ask you this: do you see the just topics?
No, I am not. Can you put me the link?
Oh yeah, put it in the chat.
On the chat window. On the chat window of this meeting.
I see. Okay, we have a special. So bear with us.
Sorry, listeners. Just give us 30 seconds and we will be back to the topic.
Yes. Just a moment and we will be back to the
topic. There is a secret recipe just cooking.
You have, dear listeners, you have 25% chances that it will be something interesting.
And I'm interested to know about topic
8,
which is kind of related, and excited to challenge you on that a bit.
Sure, okay. So, effectively, Apple now owns 70% of the AirPhone market. Like, that is the... And that is it. Like, they've done the AirPods so well, that everyone was laughing with them. And it's literally divided the industry on before and after. Like, if you remember what was before the AirPods, there was two cases. Cases number one, you would have your Bluetooth earphones, obviously, with all these horrible problems to connect to Bluetooth. Like, if you still think that Bluetooth works fine, this means you never use the AirPods. Like, just try it. You will never want to go to normal Bluetooth. Now, the options one, you would have the AirPods with the battery literally inside of the thread that connects two of them. And this battery would be on your back or somewhere like that. So it would be a thread connecting left and right with a battery that would be on your neck, which is like horrible. Like, there is no need for that thread, but it would be there and it's like weighs a little bit. Or the second option even worse. Like, the second option, when you have something like micro USB on each of the earphones, left and right, and then you need to connect your cord to both of them, which like would be even more horrible solution. And yeah, I don't know who designed it, but hopefully he go to straight to hell. And and finally, Apple told everyone, look, you can actually use a case. And suddenly everyone, it's actually a nice solution. Now everyone using the case for recharging AirPods. So they effectively solved both of the problem. And yes, they own now the market. Obviously, I'm pretty sure that the stats includes the fact that they bought Beats. But to be fair, Beats is a niche market. They're big and not that big. I see AirPods literally now everywhere. Like, almost all around, you will see one or two AirPods around, someone who using them, and occasional people who still using something else. So what do you think? What's your challenge?
Two things. Mm-hmm. I'm actually following AirPods mm-hmm. as a business, because it's very interesting to know. I think I read it somewhere. Professor Scott Galloway, he's a very famous figure. He is a New York University finance professor, and you can find him on LinkedIn, Twitter. He also has a blog. Mm-hmm. If you're not following, you and listeners as well, I would strongly recommend following that guy. He really gives out a lot of data. But yeah, apart from that, so he actually shared that with data. Apple AirPods, even if you just take it out as a separate company, mm-hmm. it is like Fortune 500 mm-hmm. with respect to the revenue. It's almost like, I think, $7 or $8 billion revenue per year business. So which means just AirPods as a company, even assume that Apple was not there, it is a spin-off, some other startup started it, it's a Fortune 500 company independently. Mm-hmm. So that speaks a lot about the success of the product itself in the market. And it owns 70% of the market. Yeah, that's interesting, and it's not unbelievable. But I would say that, don't you think it's a piece of art? No doubt about that. But it's a somewhat kind of like create a problem and then solve it. Is it like really necessary? What would have caused like wired earphone? I mean, there might be very few percentage of people who had trouble with that, but I would argue that more than 80% of the people who are using AirPods near actually did they even had trouble using a wired earphone, or was it like a forced move? I mean, it's an evolution, it's a piece of art, awesome thing. There were few people with problems with wired earphone, but do you think 100% of the users of AirPods had a problem using a wired headphones?
To be fair, I never met a person in my life with wired earphones who would not want to get rid of the wire. And the reason why they still would continue using wire is because Bluetooth earphones of the previous generation were completely not usable. Like, you had to recharge them daily, which means that you'll forget to do so. And if you forget, you no longer can use them. And the recharging process was horrible. And the connection process was horrible, especially if you're trying to use it with several devices. So the cord was effectively a hack that you don't have to use cord. There is no any reason whatsoever why you need cord, but that was a hack because any other way of connecting earphones were not even close to usability level of the cord. So yeah, I do think it's a real problem, like real problem, similar how I actually think charging is also a real problem. I don't want to recharge them. Like, if there would be a way not to recharge them, I will buy it. Obviously, there is a limit to the price that I wouldn't want to pay. But if I would need to recharge them only like once per month, for example, or once per 2 months, I will buy it without thinking twice. So same happens here. They finally solved the main problem that made the cordless, wireless earphones finally usable. And yeah, everyone just bought it because the problem is there.
That's awesome. In the interest of time, I think we are also running short of time. Sure. Just one thing I'm very curious about is that when a company like Xiaomi or Google Nexus or Samsung or any of these companies who are like really big market on the Android come up with a product like AirPod, how big it could be? Because iPhone itself, as the percentage of smartphone users, is so less compared to like number of Android users. So when something like AirPod is built in the Android world, wow, man, that's going to be like a huge fragmented business or dominated by few companies. I don't know, but it's much, much bigger than the business of 70% that you are talking about with respect to AirPod. There is like huge, open, wild community out there waiting to see this kind of really nice to use product for Android. There might be few companies that are already starting to build, and I also talked about some, which is reducing price by more than half of the AirPod and making very similar product or with very similar promises, may or may not have reached the same product quality, but eventually when they do, it is such a huge market. Nobody actually paid attention that headphones itself could be like so big market until AirPods come in and said, yeah, I can stand alone and I will be still Fortune 500 company.
And it's the first time Apple is doing so. They actually successfully done several moonshots. They created iPad. So if you remember, there was no market of tablets. There was market of iPads. The whole market was iPad. And then I do remember that history is quite interesting. So at some point, Android went to the market, and Android tablets was so horrible. They were so horrible back then that effectively everyone need to the community and the industry decided to do something about it. So the Android release of Android 3 that was led by Google mentioned that no, this Android version 3 will not be open, so it will be distributed only to few developers, hardware developers, namely like Samsung got their hands on, and we will effectively control the hardware so we know the level of the quality. And that developed in the first actually more or less usable Android tab. And that started the shifting in industry slowly but steady. But before that, there was no interesting tablet. So this is not the first time they're doing so. To be fair, it's fairly amazing to me, because this means that, for me, it means that in some cases, some rare cases, moonshot strategy can work. And probably looking just on them, it feels like this strategy works if the cost of switching is low and you have tons of the benefits. So effectively means generic consumer market. If you,
Exactly. I'm interested to hear more about the topic five here.
Five. Oh, I closed the document. Okay, let's finish on this topic. Ah, podcast studio. Okay, yeah, let's finish on it because we already almost exhaust our time. I have on my new studio. So I currently speaking with my current studio. So I now finally have two of them. My mobile studio one. So right now using my mobile studio one is effectively a reasonably good setup. It's Rode Podcaster, USB microphone that has audio interface directly built in, and which is fine, which is really good microphone. I've been using it for years, like 10 years, I guess, or I don't know, maybe not the 10 years, but like 5-7 years for sure. And it's good. But I wanted to finally build a more proper studio setup with extracted audio interface, with better microphone. I research the market a lot, and I pick my new choice of the microphone, and it's Shure SM7B. This is an amazing microphone. It's a studio microphone, which obviously doesn't have direct audio interface, so you effectively need either the mixer, or you need an audio interface or something. You also need amplifier, because it's actually passive microphone, so it requires really good amplifier. You just literally cannot plug it in through the audio interface, otherwise you will not hear anything, literally. So you need something that will boost the volume. And that's it. Now we have it. So I have the microphone. For the audio interface, I got... ProSound Studio 24C, I guess. ProSound, I think it's called like that. Studio 24C, which is very, very simple audio interface. It can mix, work as a mixer for several sources. But to be fair, I don't need more. I don't have a studio setup, so I don't have more than... Sorry, I don't have a multi-tenant studio. So it's all only me who going to speak there in that particular home studio. So yeah. Finally, I got that need after I effectively realized that my main hardware at work, I do want to do recording occasionally from home, and I don't have anything at home now. So because everything now migrated to my mobile studio, and kind of it was good timing to do my new project, build a normal studio, and I've done it. It's amazing. I've already done my first Russian-speaking podcast. I restarted. I was doing it for a long, long time. Done a new episode of new Russian speaking show. In English it's called how do you can translate it? Diary probably of a small turtle. And the sound quality is amazing. Like I completely in love with that microphone. Obviously Rode Podcaster is also very, very good, but I've been using it for years, and internal embedded audio interface in Rode Podcaster is reasonably good, but even the fact that you cannot change it, it's like literally embedded there, it makes me sad. So this is very high level of review of what now I have.
Very, very excited about your new podcast, though I do not know Russian, so I might not be your listener, but very excited, and I'm pretty sure all your Russian listeners would be thrilled as well for you to get back into that podcast. Congratulations on your first episode.
Thank you.
I know you are the person with a strong bias for action and moves really quick once you know what's the problem or once you know what you want to do. So that's amazing and not surprising. and for your new studio setup, that's awesome description. I think it would be interesting if you have a Medium blog post like you usually have it for various things, just put it out around your setup, and it might help a lot of people like me who are also interested to learn more about what is the recommended thing and how do we set it up. And there might be many listeners who also wanted to start a podcast, and it might help them and save a lot of time to just get started with something that's really working fine, including me. I would be the first reader. So if you post it, let me know the link, and I would definitely want to read and do a setup of that quality myself, because I do also want to have really good recording setup for me. I think what I have is working fine, but I do want to upgrade because I'm enjoying and loving these podcasting episodes a lot, and I'm pretty sure I would be running it for a long time as well. So thanks for sharing, but put it in writing so it gets recorded. You will be in the history, my friend.
Yeah, it's a very, very good idea, but it reminds me a good joke that you might find on the School of Law in Ukraine. Like, if you think about anything, don't say it. If you're saying anything, don't put it in writing. If you put it in writing, don't sign it. But if you thought, if you said, if you wrote it, and if you signed it, don't be surprised.
Very good one. Okay. I think we are running short of time. You have anything else to talk?
No.
Any other interesting topic?
Thank you, everyone. And I see you next time. I think Sandeep will be host, right?
I guess Zane.
Oh, Zane.
Or
okay.
Me. Either of us. But I'm very interested to talk about gaming, so we will figure it out. But for sure, similar to this episode, our listeners are going to enjoy a lot hearing to us. And I think this episode will be published under our new name, new logo. And I'm excited about that. Thank you so much for hosting, and I enjoyed a lot. I learned a lot, and I know that you are a big Apple lover. And next time I will be very aware of starting any topic related to that. And I also know that you might be a Tesla hater, so I will be careful about that as well.
The fact that I don't have money on Tesla doesn't mean that I hate it.
Okay, anyways, thank you, listeners. It was great. Hoping to have you back on our next episode. Please do tweet us and connect with us on Twitter. Yes, Slack as well, to recap, is coming soon. So we will be having a much more closer interaction. Looking forward to talking to you all, listening, and also getting a lot of strong feedbacks as well on what we can improve. And with that, Slava, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandeep. See you next time. Bye-bye.